I appreciated what Brother Holt has said this morning immensely. This camp has been one that has been very easy to appreciate from the very start. And I do believe it is not idle talk that God is opening up a door for us. And I'm going to endeavor to speak, if I'm to speak, as it pretty well comes. But I may have said this to some of you before. I always had the idea that David had written the 90th Psalm, where it mentions man's days being 70 years, and if he has 10 added, it's just 10 more of the same as came before. But to my surprise, in my Bible, it says it's the Song of Moses, a Psalm of Moses. See a few heads nodding, and that's what my Bible says. And if that is if it's said by him, that is quite a thing. And why I'm bringing this to your attention, he stretched that out to 120 years. And yet there was nothing wrong with him at that time. It would seem like that he could have gone right on living. And he's promising his life. Yeah. I can never understand God. I guess with my little bit of ability to understand, that wouldn't be strange. And Merv got talking about all that a person's brain contains and how little we use and how those fellows that ran and came in with such a good record, running 21, 24 miles or 26 miles. He was saying this to inspire you. We need inspiration like that. I thought it was quite a thing that Herrick said this morning. He wanted to life as long as it was he had his faculties. I had an aunt pass away. I was at her funeral. It was an aunt by marriage. It was around the 12th or the, somewhere around the 12th of June, 15th, somewhere in there when we laid her away. If she would have lasted till the 28th of June, she'd have been 90 years old. But the very wonderful part of it was her mind was clear as a bell right to the last. We had visited her Saturday before she passed on and had a real lovely visit with her. And we were talking to her daughter, that home she was staying in. And this daughter said to us, "You know, Mom, she was clear and thought and had no problem that way." She said, "In fact, the night she passed on, I was working around. They run a little store out west of Meadow Lake." She said, "I was working around there getting things straightened around for the night." And she said, "I noticed Mother looked a little tired. So I said, 'Would you like to go to bed, Mom?' And so she said, 'I think I would.' And so Ruth took her in, got her ready for bed, and she gave her pill. She had a heart, trouble with the heart, and so she gave her a heart pill. And then she said she noticed that her mother was a little in pain. She figured she was distressed. Now I'll go back to what I'm going to say. When she was leading her into the room, she went by a calendar. And here was a name on there of Ruth's hairdresser. And she turned to Ruth and she said, 'Ruth, you misspelt that girl's name.'" Yeah. Ruth said to us, "That's nothing wrong. Out of the ordinary, I always had trouble with spelling." But she was keen enough that just a few minutes before she died, she noticed that. Yeah. Oh, what a wonderful thing life would be. And I must have been hard on God, you'd have fancied, to call off a man that had gone that far. Brother Berg, when he spoke that night, if you referred to, he did open something, I think, for us. I don't think any of us, I think we should endeavor, by the help of God, to try to change our way of thinking. I had to laugh at my wife. I mentioned this in a few of the churches, and she'll have to forgive me for telling her on this. But I'd been working around here fairly hard for a week or so, and I came to the second Friday, and by that time I decided I was going to slow down just a little, and I kind of laid off a bit. But by Saturday night, I felt I needed some exercise. I went out here on the road and started to walk up to the airport. And I felt good that night. And my time, I'd got away a little late. And so I shifted into a higher gear that not often I do. I generally just walk as fast as I can. But I speeded up and I jogged about a third of the distance up to the airport and back. And I come back and I was telling my wife about it. And she looked at me, she said, "Erwin, you're over 70 years." Now that's just one, that's the way we look at things. When you get to a certain age, because other men have had to give up around that time, you hang them up. Because other men retire at such and such an age, you find yourself when you get up there that has an effect on you. Not so much the way you feel as what you know. Maybe we got too little brain in some ways and not enough in others, but we should maybe control it a little. I was thinking this morning that we are maybe in a similar position to what Mordecai, almost forgot his name, realized that Esther was in when he said, "Who knows? But you've come to the kingdom for such an hour as this." I can hardly see why God is pouring out His Spirit in our midst like He is, and telling us what He is telling us, and doing it for naught. It just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. Oh, may God help us to begin to think of the possibilities that are ours. If Moses wrote that, then that age must have been accepted in that time, but it was nothing for God to add King Hezekiah, God told him, told the prophet to tell him to put his house in order. That he was going to die and not live. And that was a tremendous shock to Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a man that had endeavored to walk with God. And he had a certain knowledge of God. And when that came, it just didn't satisfy his heart. And so he just turned his face to the wall and began to pray unto God. Yeah. I can never see the reason me getting out of bed where it's cold and shivering so I can't concentrate when I can lie in bed and contact God. If that's the way he wants me to do it. But he contacted God and wept before God and brought to God's attention some things that had bearing. And the Lord spoke to Isaiah and sent him back and told him he'd add 15 years to his life. That's not hard. I don't see the man here. He was here at feast. I think he was here earlier. Maybe somewhere in the crowd. But one night in a certain place, he had a kind of a promise given to him that by the Spirit of God, and as far as I know, he must have pretty well lived out those years. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. Oh, bless God. Bless God. Bless God. Moses, when he stood there that day at the burning bush, he had been attracted by seeing that dry desert bush burning and it not being consumed. So he went over, turned his path towards it, and came to it. And God spoke to him and told him, he said, come no closer and take the shoes from off your feet, for the soil you stand on is holy ground. I was thinking of that this morning. It made me feel like that if you wouldn't think I was some kind of a nut, I felt like I'd almost like to take my shoes off. I had to speak this morning. And God began to reveal to Moses what he had in his plan for him. And God and Moses had come to a place in his experience that as far as being able, he felt he was the last person on the face of the earth that qualified for the thing that God had called him 40 years before. He did everything in his power to convince him that he shouldn't go. But you know, Moses is a person that fascinates me. He had no strength. God told him what he wanted him to do, pressured him, so he went and did it. But he never seemed to lose the realization where his strength came from. And when the great deliverance came, and they rejoiced over the armies being drowned, Moses led them in singing. At 120 years, his voice must have been like his eyes. It must have been still good because he led them in the singing. And he sang that God was his salvation and God was his strength. And he said, I will prepare a tabernacle for him. Now, and I was reading on over his life. And I noticed my Bible marked it as a desire for a closer walk with God. And my goodness, you know, the carnal would say when a man had all those things performed through him by the power of God, that was pretty close to the end of the road. But he besought God and he asked him a strange question. He said, you promised to send a man with me. Now, he had sent Aaron. He had raised up Joshua. But that didn't seem to be the man that God, that Moses wanted. And you know what God said to him? My presence. That was the man he really wanted. My presence will go with you. And he said, if it's not going to be go with me, send me not up hither. And though he prayed over Joshua, and he was full of wisdom because the hands of Moses had been laid on him and he prayed for him, yet God did a similar thing for Joshua before he actually started to fulfill the work in the promised land by that man with a drawn sword. Who said, when he questioned him, said he was the captain of the host of the Lord. Yes, sir. Now maybe I will go over into the book of Hebrews. And I'm going to over where Terry was the other night. He's not here, so he won't know that I'm infringing on his territory. But there's some things I'd like to touch on there. You'll maybe remember that he started reading in the latter part of the 11th chapter, and he read about all those men of faith, the ones that had victory. He read of some of them, and he read about those that went through these sufferings and so forth. And then he read where the 39th verse of the 11th chapter, where it said, and these all, having obtained a good report through faith receive not the promise. They had the qualification. They had the good report. Then he read this verse, which you're all very familiar with. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Now, why am I reading you this? You and I were taught in the early part of the move of the rest of God. And that Joshua hadn't taken them into that real rest. Because if he had, there would be no need of mentioning it again, of another day. I don't know if I'll touch on it or not, but I was kind of reminded by Paul's words writing on to the Romans when he said, you are closer now than when you believed. Closer to your salvation now than when you believed. And we are nigh unto 2,000 years closer now. Is it so strange? God is using the same means to stir your heart that he used to cause the dry bones of the valley that Ezekiel looked upon to begin to stir and come together. And he's using the same means that he used when he said to the prophet, prophesy unto the wind, Ezekiel, that life will come into these bones. And that they'll stand a mighty army. Don't think that I'm so well prepared for this that's ahead of us. I don't know if I ever was so scared about going further in my life than I am now. It would be the easiest thing in the world to say to the brethren, my allotted years are over. And if winter finds it hard to travel, I can tell him something. He does a lot of traveling that I'd never do unless I had to. Because I almost from the natural detest it. But oh, if God has life for us. They used to tell us this, there has to be that people that is going to enter in. If they were right, there has to come a people sometime that is going to enter into it. And if he has brought us as far as he has, we don't have to wander around in the wilderness any longer. I don't believe that's who we are. I believe our carcasses have been bleaching out in the desert. Because none of the old is going to go in there. We go on into the 12th chapter here, and what we actually start it is a transformation that those that have gone on ahead are going to behold. or they're longing to behold. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. Now, we've been being taught that already. And one fella even suggested I'd have to leave my hockey game soon. Oh, yeah. That's something pretty mean. And some of you guys that really got carried away with that Gretzky fella, you're going to have to find a lot harder than me. Oh, yes. I've got really good news for you. You're going to find a lot harder. I'll tell you something. That's likely just a small bit of weight. That doesn't add anything to you, and it takes away very little. You're no richer by it, or you're no poorer if you don't get it. But there's likely a lot of things that God will draw to your attention that is maybe of a far more important commodity. But you know, God could work things. He can cause things to drop off. Yeah, he needs to speed him up. He's likely got a wind. We got lovely trees out here. The brethren, for a few years, while they talked about taking those big poplars out, I've hope I've left the vicinity when they do that, unless they just die a natural death. I think they're so beautiful. When autumn comes here and our trees are in full color, I don't have to drive thousands of miles to see beauty. It's right there before me. But those, I know when they start turning and get that beautiful color, and I admire them, that it's going to be a short time before it's gone. It may only be a couple of days, and then it seems like old Mother Nature sends a wind and just rocks those trees and scatters the leaves. And I'll tell you something. God can send a wind, and he can scatter your leaves. I think it was Brother Bird talking about the eagle. And he did. He told it a little more gentle than I'd have heard it told. They told me that the old eagle begins to, when he gets old, he begins to pine away, and he begins to become inactive, and he sits around and just kind of mopes and doesn't move hardly any. And about the time you'd figure he was going to call it quits, then something seems to get in him, and he just goes out and beats himself until he's practically like a pulp. And as Brother Berg says, he just knocks his feathers out and the likes of that. And then he put it in quite a way. He said he looked around behind him and walked away from him and looked at what was left behind. Ah, bless God. I would to God that God would inspire us that though we maybe have been coming into a position of mopery or dormancy, that bless God, the Spirit of God will get in us and will shake us and beat us and cause us, bless God, to knock out the old feathers if necessary, but bless God, they'll be replaced with new, so we rise in newness of life. I'm not talking this morning to hear myself heard. I am talking to you this morning by the Spirit of God about the promise that he's been seen to be trying to plant in our hearts in these days here. These are precious days, but if you went away from here satisfied to just go on as you have, not there's been anything wrong with it, but when the time comes to move on, It was all right. The tabernacle would sit out there, and as long as that cloud hovered over it, they didn't move. But as soon as that cloud began to rise and began to start moving, they began to pick up the tent pegs and get a hold of the handles of the things of the tabernacle and begin to move on. And I sure bless God that the hour is at hand and God is endeavoring to stir us, that the cloud is beginning to rise. Oh, bless God. Let the Spirit of God shake you this morning. Let Him knock out a few old feathers. Let Him, bless God, cause you, even if you may feel the effects of it, bless God, it is what you've been waiting for. Oh, praise God. I don't want to enter in to death if God is holding on life. I've not no desire to stick around and just be a vegetable. I can appreciate what Brother Holt said, but if God could give us life so we could live and vibrate with His life and could fulfill the thing He has for us to fulfill, may God help us to reach out. I don't see Brother Jack here this morning, but I longed that God the other night when he was here, that God would touch him, bless God, so he would go up and down the alleys again, bless God, like he had of old. I don't see any reason out of God is, God, our God is in heaven, that he can't do it. And I will not be satisfied, bless God, till we see some of these things really come to pass in our midst. That's not the only thing God wants. One thing He didn't want was those that had partaken of the tree of life to partake of the tree of God, the tree of knowledge. He didn't want them to partake of life. Yeah. In that state. He's been working on the process ever since. As it says here, lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us. Then let us run with patience. But there is a transformation. I went over, I can't do it this morning, I don't want to take too much time, but I went over to read where Paul was writing there to Romans in the 13th chapter, I believe it is, of Romans, where he mentioned that you're closer to your salvation now than when you believed. But he goes, maybe I should just turn there for a minute. Biggest trouble are minutes. Become longer. The 8th verse of the 13th chapter says, owe no man anything but love one another. Now, I'm not going to bother with any financial talk down that line. I'm not interested. But there's one thing it seems that Paul wants you to realize, that we may owe everybody, and that is love. That was something that God spoke to Cain about. Where was his brother? And he immediately defended himself. Was he his brother's keeper? But he goes on here and he says, for he that loveth one another hath fulfilled the law. Now, God is going to fulfill the law. Ezekiel, way back there, prophesied in his day that God was going to take away the stony heart and give us a heart of flesh, and that he would write his laws upon our hearts. The book of Romans has it there, or Hebrews. Paul referred to how he, by the pen of the Spirit, it's written on our hearts. Then he goes on and he touches on all the laws. Thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Now, Christ fulfilled the law. Get me straight. We don't receive our righteousness by fulfilling the law from that angle. But because God has wrought a work within us, in that work and in the process that takes place is the work that brings forth the laws being written upon our hearts. Oh, that is one of the ways they're going to know us, because how we love one another. I haven't got time to take you through the scriptures this morning. The apostle of love had his gospel and the epistles practically full of that necessary commodity that so many of us are maybe sadly short of it as yet. Now I'm going to go back. I don't want to keep you longer than necessary. Back to the 12th chapter. Looking on to Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before us endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. That is something that if we could really see it as God would like us to see it, it would help us on our way. Yeah. Then he goes on in, and he touches on something here that Terry touched on. I'm just going to mention it. The calling of sons and the process of development. I've often marveled, and I suppose we all feel the same way. You likely find that even others around you can do things that you can't get away with. Why is that? Because God is interested in making you into a son. Yeah. He'll clip your wings. He'll give you a slap right in the teeth when you don't expect it. He'll flatten you out just about the time you may have thought about taking off. I tell you, sometimes feel like I, just like old Jeremiah, I'll shut my mouth and I'll never say another word. Yeah. But it's the process of the calling of sons that he loves. Now, the other day when Terry got on that, I had a few verses near just about the place he stopped that I had been meditating a little on. I thought, there it goes. But I didn't think that I'd be using his material and then just coming into what I'd been looking at. The eighth verse, but if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, all those that are being called as sons are partakers. Then are ye bastards and not sons. You should be thankful for it, though it may be hard to thank it. I many times now, when I'm get up to middle age, who was it was saying? Yes, it was this doctor down here is saying, referring to me middle age. I thought that's pretty good, but if he's going to middle age, he's going to have to reach Moses' years before he's at middle age now. But you know, I, many times, my dad has gone on years ago, but many times now I'm far more thankful for some of his corrections that he gave me back there than I was back there. I may have had very little appreciation. In fact, maybe lots of times none at all. For furthermore, we have fathers of the flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. And that is what God expects you to do. My older brother referred to my dad as the old man when I was with him once, and I'll tell you, that was hard to put up with. Yeah. And we never called him that when he was around. And if I dare say if he'd just come in on the scene, Sil would have been apologetic. Yeah. But I thank God for the respect that my parents put in my heart for them. That's right. For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now there's certain things we're going to have to receive. God puts a value on what he calls holiness. Now, no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruits of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Now, if it doesn't work that out, the process will likely have to go over again. Unless he gets tired doing it and just quits and gives up. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. Oh, God has been endeavoring to strengthen you. God is funny the way he works. Many times he's strengthening you and he's weakening you. Yeah. Paul thought, sure, if the Lord would just take that thorn out of his flesh, whatever in the world it was, just take it out. He would be far stronger. But the Lord let him know that he was going to leave it there because it wasn't Paul's strength that was going to do things. It was going to be his strength when Paul was weak enough to let him. Wherefore, lift up the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. Let strength come into them what he wants. and make straight paths for your feet. Well, why did he want to make straight paths for feet? He goes on to tell you, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. You can maybe step feebly or gently, I'll put it that way, in coming to God for strength. But he wants you to walk in the walk he has for you to go in his strength, with great strength. Make straight paths for your feet, lest you be turned out of the way. But let it rather be healed. God doesn't want any of us to miss. No. But it could take place. No. Oh, I'm not trying to discourage you this morning. By any means. And I wouldn't want you to discourage me. I think we're in a place where we need, bless God, to endeavor to strengthen the hands of one another. Yes, sir. We're going to need one another to take the height that is before us. But rather be healed. Follow peace with all men. The follow peace with all men is there. God demands the things of us that we usually find the hardest to do. Many times the reason is we may have built a lot of things up almost unconsciously in our makeup. Some of us have struggled with bad tempers and so forth, and maybe most of us. But you know, maybe why they stick around is that maybe we like it better than we think. I remember Dr. Price telling about the, I believe it was him telling about the fellow, maybe some other man, I guess, but he... They told him about this fellow that was having trouble with his smoking. He said, "Where is he?" And he said, "He's over there." He looked over at him and he said, "I don't think he's had, that fellow's having any trouble with it. He looks to me like he's enjoying it." Yeah. I don't know if I ever mentioned this before, but I sometimes think of it in the case of this guy. Norm will remember the boy he used to chum with, young Billy Tarney. He's a good aged man now. But he when they were playing together, they're around the same age when they were playing together, and Billy had a lot of stuff given to him. He showered a lot of things on his relatives and as well as his folks. He'd take some of his toys and just break them. And then he'd say to Norman, "My, haven't I got an awful temper? My, haven't I got an awful temper?" Some of those things may have got engraven in us. It'll take a lot to get out. But God wants them to go. He wants, as it says here, to follow peace with all men. He wants us to start putting on those sandals of peace, the gospel of peace. He wants us to endeavor to maintain it. You may say something sometime, and you may realize afterwards you may have spoken a little out of turn. And God may speak to you to go back and make that right. You might say the other fellow caused me to say it. That's none of your business at all. Your part is to make your part right. No. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man can see the Lord. Now, they say that the word that is translated holiness is translated in different ways. And I noticed in my Bible, I think it is a reading, it said that they wish they'd use the term set apart. Now I can see what they mean. But set apart, you can be set apart. Excuse me for saying this, because I'm not trying to take a slant at anything. But there's been men that's been set apart in monasteries and the likes of that, spent years in them, that may receive precious little, if any, of what God really wanted them to receive by being set apart. Now get me right, I don't say that maybe some of those men back there, even in those circumstances, that God actually did a work. As far as I know, Martin Luther had spent time like that, and God revealed to him the way of salvation by faith. But countless ones were with him there. I was going to say his buddies, not likely his buddies, may have received much other ways. Yeah. Holiness is something you can be set apart. But to receive the holiness God wants, it's a process of change, a process of cleansing. It's a process of going further in the death that some of you were baptized into this morning, and we've all been baptized into. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. Now I'll tell you what's before us is going to receive and need. A lot you're going to need, and I'm going to need an awful lot of the grace of God. And as I said in the article I wrote, a lot of people know grace on the level of salvation. But actually, salvation just opens the door, in a sense, to the graces of God. It may be 40 or 50 years since that process of grace did such a work in your life. But now you're faced with something that is going to need grace, an abundance of His grace, on a higher level. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Oh, my God, help us. It's bad enough for a person or people to entertain bitterness in their hearts that will sour them and taint them. It's a sad thing, but it's a sad thing that they are generally, the effects of it doesn't only affect them. It many times affects them around, those around them. I would to God that we would search our hearts and see if there be any evil way in us that is displeasing unto God. I never forget this. I can forget things so easy, and there's some things I seem to never forget. But I remember coming home years ago, and Brother Kinderchuk had been down here at the assembly and spoke on the root of bitterness. And he had got the inspiration from digging quack grass out of his garden. Now, that's where he got the inspiration. Oh, don't be afraid of work. And many times you get more inspiration at work than anywhere else I know of. But he was digging out the quack grass roots. And he said, you know, I realized that I had to get everyone. Why did he realize that? He knows the characteristics of that plant. All he would have to do is leave a little root in there. And in a few years or a few days, it wouldn't take long till his troubles would all be back. My goodness, I do a lot of work around here trying to keep my end of the grounds clean. And there's one thing you can practically always find, that there's one plant that will furnish your work, and that's crackgrass. It gets under the cement and the pavement, so you can't get at it, at the source of it. And then when your back is turned, it's shooting out its shoots, and they run this way and they run that way. And unless you're right on your toes, it gets away and gets into plants, and then you've lost. Oh, may God give us wisdom. I think that's all I'm going to say to you this morning. But I trust that God has brought us a few things to help us, that we'll view the thing that God has been putting before us, the thing that He has been speaking by prophecy. God has, down through the ages, has done wonderful things by one means, and not the only means, but prophecy is a means He's used. There, when He had sent the remnant back to Jerusalem, the opposition tied their hands and stopped the work that God had sent them back to do. Had brought it to a stop. Just made it stand still. Nothing seemed to be changed from the that could be noticed or that could be seen. But something that couldn't be seen began to work. And in the heart of the prophets, Zechariah and Haggai, God's Spirit began to move. And I suppose they hardly knew why or what they were going to really, how He was going to do what He was telling them to do. But He began to tell them to tell those fellows to get to work and get back at it. And so they just, because that spirit of prophecy was there urging them to get back to work, that's what God had sent them to do, they started. And when the opposition come, God put the right words in their mouth and told them to go back and look the records over. That in the year of the rain, one of the years of the reign of Cyrus, He had put in there all the provisions necessary. And it was so complete there wasn't a thing they could do about it. And I tell you, whether we are fearful to walk on and enter in, God is opening it up for us. Oh, praise God. Merv, go ahead and carry out your running in the morning. He was telling us, I forget what age he was, that he wanted to still be able to make that distance in that time. Go ahead and do it. Let that brain of yours stretch out, and that's what does it. Help blow mine up a little, because it sure needs it. Needs a transplant or something. But oh, let us think. Let us think life. Let us live life. Let us grasp for it. Let us reach out and take hold of it. Yes, sir. And as I said this, I was speaking on some of these things to the assemblies around. I said this to them. Even if we don't make it, we will be classed in those that saw it are far off and embraced it. Yes, sir, you can't make the one make the other. Anybody can doubt. It doesn't take much to doubt. But God doesn't want that. God wants you to actually enter in to the fullness of that. Yeah. Abraham was wise enough that he knew unless God undertook for him and undertook for Sarah, there wasn't a chance. He could change his name 100 different ways of making it father of many nations. Unless God took and got into the scene and changed things, there was no hope. But he believed and had hope against hope. Yes, sir. The writer, Paul, writing about it, he said he never even doubted. And I'll tell you this. You can doubt in the natural, but if you are maintain the faith of God in the Spirit, you're not doubting in that man. I remember what G.R. said when he was with us one time, and the Spirit of God had been on him. He said he didn't believe a person could believe and exercise faith in the carnal. It had to rise up into the realm of the Spirit. And if we're going to exercise that's going to take us in, we're going to have to rise up in the realm of the Spirit. May God bless you.